Welcome everyone to the very first Fireside Chat from Tetra. It's a new format we're trying, so I'm very pleased that you've joined us. We are reflecting today on 2024 just gone. We're recording this just before Christmas, but we're looking back at 2024 and ahead to 2025 to see what the significant challenges and developments and how we can prepare ourselves for the year ahead. It gives me great pleasure to introduce somebody who really needs no introduction, which is Dr. Sean Lundy, who is a head of quality assurance and strategy here at Tetra Consulting. Sean, if you could just introduce yourself a little bit and some of the work you've been doing in the last year and some of your industry connections and associations.
Yeah, thanks, Magnus. Of course, I've been working alongside the Property Institute, the TPI, for quite a number of years, helping to educate and inform the property management sector on the implications of the post-Grenfell environment that we find ourselves in. I also work with the professional body, IOSH. I'm on the presidential team as vice president and currently vice chair of the IOSH Construction Group, where we obviously look across a broad range of health and safety issues, but the Building Safety Act and the implementation of that has been pretty significant, of course, over the last few years. Helping with education, CPD, updating syllabus to make sure that it reflects these changes has been, it's been really challenging, but it's also been very rewarding, actually, over the last few years. So, I'm very grateful to have had that opportunity to make that contribution to the property management community.
Thank you. So 2024 has been quite a year with significant regulatory changes and advancements, if you could say call them that. So if you can reflect on 2024, what do you think some of the big changes and challenges have been?
Well, I think for quite some time, actually, we were anticipating legislation, and then 2024 saw the implementation of the Building Safety Act and associated regulation. It's seen the publication of the Grenfell Inquiry Phase 2 report with well over 50 recommendations made, a very significant report, very quite damning in many ways, but also pretty progressive, actually, in some of those recommendations around competence, regulation of the fire risk assessment industry, and indeed a real focus on culture, which I think is very interesting. We've seen the building safety regulator come into play, a new building safety regulator, which has sort of taken the role of the building control approval authority, and that's starting to have real impact this year. These are big events, really, in the calendar, and I think 2024 is really marked by getting to grips with that. I think, a lot of stakeholders are beginning to engage with it in a very positive way, but there's still quite a lot of work to do. So I think it's been a real pivotal year, actually, for all of those things. I think there's still a lot to come. 2025, 2026 will be very interesting as we move forward with many of these requirements.
And with reference to the Building Safety Act, I mean, there's a lot of work to be done if you have a higher risk building. And, if you attend any of the events and you hear different stories of readiness and responsiveness from organisations, where do you think people are generally?
Yeah, it is difficult at times to gauge where the industry is. There's no publicly available data to show that. But certainly through TPI conferences and regional seminars, having sort of asked the audience where they are, it would appear to me that probably about a quarter to a third of duty holders have actively engaged with the process. I think that's to be expected, even though the Building Safety Act has come in and there's an expectation that compliance would have started almost immediately, there's bound to be some sort of lag effect a lot of these requirements do cost money, people have to engage with it, and sometimes, of course, works that are needed to bring buildings up to those required standards takes time to get done. So we are seeing a bit of a progression. So probably about a third of the industry, I think, is sort of fully or actively engaged with that process. So two thirds probably to go. And I know the regulator is very keen, actually, to see people starting to take that action as soon as possible. In fact, many years ago, Dame Judith Hackett, in her report on building safety, made that call that we shouldn't wait for legislation to be put in place. We should start taking action now. But I think the industry does need some clear drivers and also probably some clear guidance to support them in meeting those requirements.
Is that the heart of the challenge that you think that people are facing in terms of, you know, knowing what to do? Or what are the challenges that are stopping this two-thirds, as it were, getting going and doing what they should be?
Yeah, I think it's almost like a bit of a perfect storm, because, you know, there's been a cost of living crisis. I think there's a lot of pressure on certainly on leaseholders. If you're a residential leaseholder, you're seeing your service charge maybe go up quite a bit. Some of that will be around building safety, so that in itself is a challenge. That sort of bow wave of cost that comes in. I think resources have been a real challenge as well. We're doing stuff that we've not done before. So, you know, writing safety case reports, for example, is a new service delivery for most people who work in the property industry. Having sort of previously lectured at university, we talked a lot about safety case reports and safety cases in higher risk industries. So it's a well understood concept, if you like, in those high risk industries. But when it comes to property, we've never done that before. So nobody really knew what good looks like. We're all waiting for a bit of guidance, perhaps, from the regulator. And I think that's been a significant challenge. And in some ways, that probably has created some of these delays that we're seeing. And I think property managers generally have had a massive challenge in upskilling themselves to understand these new requirements. So that always takes a bit of time. But I've always been really heartened, you know, when I go to events and I'm sort of part of that property community, to feel the engagement. There's no question that there's a massive challenge out there, but people are definitely up for the challenge, you know, and they want to learn, they want to embrace this. They know it's really important that we have safer buildings. So they kind of get it. It's just making it happen is probably the biggest challenge, and that's where, of course, we're doing a lot of work in supporting clients in that regard.
Thank you. And as we record this just before Christmas in 24, you've talked a lot about regulator feedback and basically on building safety cases have gone in. As we record this, no certifications have been issued yet, and feedback has been varied, shall we say.
Yeah, we're in December. As far as I know, and I'm part of a number of communities where people have committed to share their experiences of either gaining a building assessment certificate or feedback from the regulator. So whilst a lot of our clients and us and some of the stakeholders we're working with less directly have had feedback from the regulator on submissions of their safety case reports and resident engagement strategies, mandatory occurrence reporting systems, we haven't seen anyone get a building assessment certificate yet. So what I understand is we expect that very early in the new year. I think the reason behind that is that this first 6 months or slightly longer has been a period of learning, not only for us in the industry, but also for the regulator themselves. So they probably used this as a bit of a process to help them understand what good looks like, but also what is proportionate in the industry. So proportionality is something I talk about a lot, you know, getting the cost balanced against the risk right, so we're not over-engineering or creating an industry unnecessarily. So I think that's been a massive challenge. I think the regulator is part of that picture, and they indeed want to get it right. So they probably needed this time to help, calibrate themselves, if you like, before issuing those certificates. I mean, the other interesting bit associated with that, which I think people are really waiting for, is to understand what the costs are that the regulator is going to charge. So the regulator charges a fee for a submission of a certificate, and they also charge a fee for their time in reviewing and assessing that. And we don't know quite what that looks like. So, you know, people have sort of allocated money against that perceived cost, but nobody actually has had a bill yet. So nobody's received a certificate, nobody's received a bill. And I think when we get that information out, that's going to be really valuable. So, you know, we're obviously committed to sharing that. I know the communities I'm part of, everyone is committed to working together to share information so that we can help everyone understand it. Because I think that kind of doubt and uncertainty is leading to some delays as well. So once we know what good looks like, we know what the fees are likely to be, we can see people getting certificates, I think that will motivate people to maybe engage with the process more fully, which is what we really need people to do.
Thank you. Mm. I mean, it's fascinating because there is so much uncertainty. And then you talk about the role of the intelligent customer, which actually becomes even more important when there's so much uncertainty. I wonder if you could just expand on what an intelligent customer is and how does one become one?
Yeah, it's a phrase. I mean, I use this phrase a lot, and it's not my phrase. It's a phrase that the regulator has used for many years, actually. And, you know, the principle of the intelligent customer is that, you know, if you procure services into your organisation to do work, an element of that will have a health and safety impact, if you like, on the organisation. So there is inherently an obligation on you to make those reasonable inquiries as to the competence or even the quality of that service that's being provided. So the intelligent customer principle is based on the fact that all organisations and individuals that work in the organisations need to be competent to make those decisions. So knowing what good looks like, a phrase I use quite a lot, is part of that intelligent customer story. I mean, in the Grenfell inquiry report, the phase two report, there's some very candid descriptions and analysis of procurement of the fire risk assessor who was not deemed to be competent. They made up post-nominals, made themselves appear to be more competent than they actually were. Indeed, the procurement person or organisation that engaged them didn't know what competence was either. So it demonstrates not only the obligation, the ethical obligation on people to provide those services, they need to be competent, need to be able to demonstrate that, but also the people that procure the service need to understand what good competence looks like. So I think there's a whole picture around the intelligent customer. It's a principle all organisations must engage with. It's in their interest as well to provide good value for money, but very critically, of course, to make sure things are done in the right way, you know, in a safe way.
Great, thank you. And particularly driven by Grenfell, engaging residents is a crucial component of building safety. How are people doing, and could they do better?
Yeah, I mean, I think resident engagement for me is a big picture issue. It's not just about health and safety or fire. You know, it's important on so many levels. You know, residents, you know, they need to be given the right information. They need to feel that things aren't being hidden from them. And that cuts across everything that's being provided to them. Obviously, health and safety and fire, very, very important. They're informed about that. And if, you know, should they require information, they're able to get at it. And if they have concerns, they're able to raise those concerns. So there's nothing complicated about resident engagement. I think delivering on it can be a bit more challenging because you might set up a meeting, tell all your residents you're going to talk about building safety, and you turn up, nobody else turns up. So because actually they're not really that bothered at that particular time. But what we've learned from Grenfell, of course, is that residents felt that they didn't have a voice. That resident voice wasn't there. They were raising issues. Those issues weren't being listened to or actioned, and that's led to a lot of resentment, of course, on the lead up to Grenfell, and then of course the terrible tragedy at Grenfell, and then people reflecting on that and saying, well, actually, you know, I raised some of those issues with the management organisation and they didn't listen. So there's a real lesson there. And again, Dame Judith made that point that resident voice should be at the heart of this new regime. I think that's a very easy thing to say. It's a very difficult thing to deliver on. And I think we're learning. So, you know, we've written templates for resident engagement. We've advised a little bit around this subject. I mean, ultimately, it's down to the duty holder to deliver on it. But I know there has been some challenges there, and I think it will be an ongoing thing that we deliver on. It will be implemented, and then people reflect on what works and what doesn't work. And I think that's how we go. I mean, I remember settling my daughter into university accommodation and asking for a copy of the risk assessment. And you know, I was told I couldn't have it.
Really?
Those sort of days have gone, really.
Yeah, yeah.
So we do understand sometimes that residents, they're not technical experts. They don't necessarily want to receive reams of technical information about their building. But what they really want to know is that their building is safe to live in. And they want to know, if I raise an issue, will it be dealt with? And will I be told it's been dealt with to the right level? And do I have confidence that the person that's managing my building is behaving as an intelligent customer when they get people in? So I think residents legitimately can ask those questions. You know, they should say, well, you know, how competent is my risk assessor? You know, we're paying, it's on my service charge, you know, I'm paying for fire risk assessments. Who's doing them? How competent are they? You know, what are the results of that? So those are all legitimate questions, I think, that they should ask. And that really is where resident engagement's moved on a little bit. So it's sort of a bit more transparency, I would say.
Thank you. We've certainly ran, as Tetra, ran a lot of webinars across the 2024. And I know you've stood on many a podium throughout the UK. Yeah. I guess the theme here is about informing the industry and collaboration. How well do you think the industry is doing and what message do you have in terms of improving that?
Well, I mean, I can't say enough good, actually, about the Property Institute and how it's got different... you know, different sort of stakeholders engaged in this. And I think they've done a tremendous amount of work. They've really put health, safety and fire front and centre of all their events at CPD at exactly the right time. So I think that's been really great. I think what we're seeing, of course, across the property community is a lot more engagement. So, you know, I always talk about sponges and rocks, you know, so, you know, we need to have sponges, not rocks. And it's based on an analogy from Sir Clive Woodward, who is the coach of the England 2003 rugby team, who won the World Cup, of course. And he said to his team, I want sponges and not rocks. And the rugby players didn't really understand what he was talking about. And he said, well, the difference is I don't want unteachable people. I want people who are sponges, they're going to learn, develop. And I think TPI have done a lot of great work, actually, and we've been, you know, fortunate enough to be really involved in that as a business to help educate and inform the community. But that only works if that community is receptive to it. And they definitely have been receptive. But also amongst other people that work in this sector. So, you know, we're a health and safety consultancy. We've been drawn into working with other health and safety consultancies in different ways, either on groups or consultation groups, committees, but also in delivering services. And I think that's a real shift in the industry, so a very positive shift. So, you know, as I always say, my university days, you know, the big problems of the world are not solved by individuals alone, they're solved by collaborative activity. So we must collaborate in order to solve these very difficult problems and resolve these big challenges that we're all facing.
And a theme for a lot of your industry engagement has been raising the bar. Can you just talk? I mean, it's a great, very snappy. Could you just talk to that a little bit? What does it mean, and how does someone raise their own bar?
Yeah, so I did a series of regional seminars, and I've been presenting a number of events talking about raising the bar. So this is really about intelligent customer. It's about competence. It's about sort of, you know, demonstrating that when we talk about raising the bar, in other words, raising standards, you don't do that just solely by putting new legislation in place. So legislation is a key driver. It helps sort of set the scene, if you like, for what needs to be done. Of course, you know, our legislation is criminal legislation, so you must comply with it. But actually, in terms of raising the bar, it's about people. It's about behaviours and ethics. It's about having the right sort of levels of competence and clearly defining what they are. And it's also about sort of delivering against those things as well. So, and helping everyone manage those expectations. So, you know, when we're working with clients now, you know, we've raised the bar ourselves. You know, we've trained a lot of our fire risk assessors to an enhanced level. We have a very highly skilled and competent fire engineering team. They're more actively engaged now with clients because clients are demanding that. But also within the property sector themselves, I think property managers, whether you're working in the commercial sector or the residential sector, are all feeling that they need to be a little bit more competent and they need to be continually developing as professionals in the sector. So raising the bar is right across the board. It's definitely a key theme that I think the regulator is looking at organisations to engage with. But knowing what it means, so a lot of the stuff I've been presenting on around this is helping people understand where the new standards are. There's a new PAS document, PAS, which is a publicly available specification, 8673, which is a specification for competency requirements in managing residential buildings. But there's also one for principal designer and principal contractor around health and safety. So those documents need to be understood. They need to be applied into organisations. And indeed, organisations need to demonstrate they've got organisational capability reflect on themselves to say, well, actually, I'm competent as an organisation as well as having competent individuals. And there's a really interesting piece of work being done by the Building Safety Alliance around this. And a colleague who works directly for TPI, Mark Snelling, who've put together a framework for doing those organisational competency reviews. So I'm quite excited to see how that goes in the future and how that's embraced by industry, and I think that will certainly help not only raise the bar, but also demonstrate how that bar has been raised.
Great, thank you. Before we look ahead to 2025, I'm just interested in technology. We obviously have Prism, which is our risk management software. How do you see technology supporting organisations in navigating the building safety requirements?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, this industry has embraced technology over the years. I think now it's more critical than ever. The, you know, the use of systems like Prism in managing actions that arise out of risk assessments or recurring tasks, reporting on those, of course, is a very significant part, perhaps, of resident engagement going into the future. You know, how does that managing agent or the duty holder demonstrate that they're actually doing what they say they're doing? So I think technology provides almost real-time analytics to enable that to be very visible and transparent. I think what would be nice to see going into the future, perhaps, is more collaborative work in the industry to decide what that technology should look like in the future. So there's a lot of discussion around management of the golden thread. You know, obviously there's a key requirement for that to be held digitally and for duty holders to demonstrate they're concurrently managing that information. So software, of course, has a massive part to play in that. I also think, you know, handheld devices, you know, phones that we use on a daily basis, you know, can be used to help capture information on site, do routine inspections. So having a forms application, which we have in Prism, is really valuable, I think. And property managers who do more site-based work are going to have to start embracing that approach, I think, more. I think regulators as well are starting to look at it and say, well, look, you know, you must be using electronic retrieval systems to store your information, but critically also demonstrate that you're managing that information in a very proactive way.
Great. Okay, so let's look ahead to 2025. Let's get the crystal ball out, as it were. And what do you see? What are the main things that people should be looking out for in terms of trends and changes?
Yeah, so I think there's, I mean, obviously the Building Safety Act is ongoing. I mean, the whole implementation of that is going to take years. I think the regulator themselves has said that to assess all high-risk buildings, of which there are somewhere between 12,500 and 13,000 of them, is going to take 5 years to get through. So there's that aspect to it. So I think a lot of lower-risk buildings, which are also classified as high-risk buildings, like I call them lower-risk, the lower end of the high-risk building stock, they're probably not going to be called up for another couple of years. So, but 2025 is really going to be where the regulator is going to start issuing those certificates. I think we're going to start seeing that happen. We might even see duty holders held to account. So we might see enforcement action taken against some individual organisations where they haven't complied in the right way. And that will be an interesting driver, if you like, for industry. So I think all of that's going to happen. I think the focus on competence is definitely going to be there and demonstrating competence. So I think duty holders are going to start to need to think about doing competency reviews, maybe reflecting on the organisations that they buy in to do services to demonstrate that they are indeed an intelligent customer. So how much scrutiny are they applying to that? I think that's going to be an ongoing thing. I think another aspect of the Building Safety Act, which I haven't mentioned, is Part 3, which is the design and build phase of a building's life cycle. There are gateway requirements there, gateway 1, 2 and 3. So where existing buildings are having refurb work done, they're going to have to start to engage with some of those gateway requirements. And I know we're already seeing a couple of queries coming in around that, some issues arising. We know that the building safety regulator is now the building control approval authority, so they're sort of on top of that gateway process. But there is a lot of delay because people are going through a new process. The regulator is quite delayed, so we're seeing in some cases 3 months or more delays, and that presents a massive challenge. So I think that'll be ongoing work to sort of think about how to tackle those issues going into 2025. I think obviously really probably top of that list is we expect to see some feedback from Crown Prosecution Service and the Metropolitan Police and other regulators on what the next steps are in holding organisations and individuals to account for some of those issues that have been raised in the Grenfell phase one and phase two inquiry reports. So we do expect to see prosecutions perhaps into the future. So we'll probably get a statement on that, I would imagine, around March next year. And then it will probably take another couple of years for anyone to finally be held accountable and prosecuted. But I'm almost certain there will be some prosecutions post-Grenfell. It does feel like it's taken an awful long time for that point to arrive. So that will be another catalyst for motivating the industry to begin taking action perhaps a little bit more quickly than it has done so far. Another thing we're expecting in 2025, there's been new regulations proposed, draft regulations on personal emergency evacuation plans for higher risk buildings and indeed those buildings over 11 metres that have a simultaneous evacuation strategy. Now, this was a recommendation from Grenfell Inquiry Phase 1 report. It wasn't implemented into legislation, so we did have new legislation, the Fire Safety England regulations that came in a few years ago. They did bring in a whole raft of requirements as a result of those recommendations, but it left out the requirement for personal emergency evacuation plans. We often call them PEEPs. So we are expecting to see that legislation come into force in 2025. And I think that will be very interesting. I think those that are worried about vulnerable people in blocks of flats will be really happy to see that legislation come in. I think for property managers, it will present a bit of a challenge. We're already working on some solutions around that to support our clients on the implementation of that PEEPS legislation. So that's definitely one to watch out for. And I would be very surprised if that regulation doesn't come into law.
So just a couple more questions. I'm a property manager. I haven't really got my act together. It's the start of 2025. What would you advise I do?
Well, I mean, I always say you've got to have a plan, right? Well, although planning. So planning's essential. Mm. Plans always change. So sometimes they can get superseded by other plans. But you must start planning and thinking about how you're going to roll out this stuff out. It's no good really burying your head in the sand. It's not the time to do that. Talk to people as well, so go to events, network, find out what other people are doing. I think there's a lot of comfort sometimes there's a lot of comfort in shared grief, but there's also a lot of comfort in learning what other people are doing and how successful they've been. Talk to us, we're very open as a business. We do a lot of webinars and CPD, so take some time, join those events, come and see us, talk to us. We're very happy to offer advice and assistance, really, above and beyond any chargeable service. So we're very keen, actually, to help the organisation understand where it needs to be. So, yeah, planning, be an open book, be that sponge, engage, really, I think, is really important. So, and start taking action. So, the first step in most processes is to do some sort of gap analysis. Where are we now? Where do we need to be? And how we're going to get there? So that gap analysis is the first stage of that. Where am I now? And what we've noticed, of course, is sometimes where people have delayed, they've then been told they need to submit a safety case report within 28 days, and they haven't even done their gap analysis. They're really on the back foot. They really are struggling at that point. And we struggle to actually assist them as well because the timeline is just too short. The other thing I'd say is don't panic because no building is perfect. So a lot of buildings need work done. They may even need survey work done, which may take some time to deliver on. It's not a reason that the building can't be occupied. It's not necessarily a reason that the building won't meet the criteria under the Building Safety Act. The Building Safety Act really is looking for buildings that are being managed in the right way and are working towards layers of compliance, if you like. So I think it's safe to say that there is no perfect building out there. Don't expect your building to be perfect. When we write a safety case report, it is a snapshot in time. Mm. And what we're trying to demonstrate there is two things, really, that the building is safe to occupy and live in, and the building is being well managed against those regulatory standards.
You've made a really important point there about it being a snapshot in time, because I think there's not the appreciation that this is an ongoing thing. Isn't a report one and done. It's ongoing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So So when you write a report, of course, you're writing it at that time. But the safety case and the management of the safety case is an ongoing process. So that needs to happen in real time. Mm. So of course, safety case reports will need to be reviewed. You know, the regulator hasn't necessarily given very clear guidance around that, but you know, I think it would be sensible to say, you know, if you have a safety case, which is all the information and the management system that you're using to manage the building in place, that should be managed all the time. You may write a safety case report today, that might just exist for a while, and then you will update that safety case report as and when it's required. So that could be a significant change in the building, an incident. It could be just on an annual basis. So a sensible approach to managing that report, I think, is probably one of the next steps that people do need to start thinking about.
Thank you. So we do, well, this is the first of our fireside chats. We run a lot of webinars. You speak and are active in a lot of industry engagement. What do you think about Tetra's role in 2025 in terms of shaping and contributing towards the industry?
Well, I mean, certainly as a business, to be very candid about it, we've grown as a business. You know, we've certainly grown in the number of staff. We're one of those businesses who we employ all our own staff. You know, all our staff are full-time employees, and we've got nearly 200 people in our business now. So we've definitely invested in a building safety team to deal with the specific requirements around Building Safety Act and associated legislation. We've got a very really highly competent fire engineering team, which we've built out. And that's to complement, of course, our existing health, safety, fire team. So for us, competence is key. Investing in the people to get the right people into the business are competent to deliver on those new services, but also investing in our existing staff to make sure that they're continually competent to deliver on those things. So I think as a business, we're in a really good position. We've become very collaborative, so we're working very much with professional bodies, TPI, IOSH, and other sort of actors in this environment, and also listening to the regulator and, where we can, working with government departments on what's coming down the line. So trying to be sort of one step into the future so that we can prepare, innovate, and be quite agile really in the market, I think is something that we've so far been very successful on. I think we'll continue to do that in 2025. So, you know, I'm always a glass half full sort of person. So these are big challenges, but I'm quite excited by the opportunity to see standards improve, to see people developing in terms of their own personal development and organisational capability around competence. I think this is great. I'd be delighted to see better regulation of the fire risk assessment industry, and indeed stronger recognition of the fire engineering industry. I think that's long overdue. It will really help provide better value for money on those services. You know, if you buy cheap, you get bad quality, basically. And, you know, it has sometimes been a bit of a race to the bottom. So I think, you know, short-term gain, long-term pain when it comes to that sort of thing. So I think if you get the right level of competency in, people are obviously paid, and that includes property managers as well, the right sort of you know, remuneration for the work they do, then that's better for everyone actually in the long term.
Okay. And last question: if you were to describe the property and safety risk management industry as a song, what would it be and why?
I love that question. Okay, so I guess I'd have to say probably I'm a big Queen fan, so. You know, I'm a child of the 80s, so, you know, Queen were a big group for me. So I'd have to say Under Pressure, actually, which I think it was written by David Bowie, I think it was. Yeah,
actually.
I think it might have been, yeah. So Under Pressure, I guess that's quite a negative song, so I have to think of a positive song as well. So I'm going to have to say one, it's a song my son loves, which is Eye of the Tiger by Survivor, which I think was a theme tune for one of the Rocky films. So I think, you know, there's a real need. You know, we are under pressure, but I think we can be, you know, positive about rising to the challenge, if you like. I think there's a real element of that. And certainly I've witnessed that, you know, in all the events I've been to. I've been really sort of impressed, actually, by how property managers and the industry in generally has risen to the challenge. So if we can continue to do that, we'll get through this. We'll come out the other side. It will be a better environment for everyone, and you know, that's my glass half full take on it, I think.
See, now I'm going to arrange it. When you speak next to the Property Institute, they're going to play that before you come on stage.
Yeah, that'd be great. if you could do that, would be fantastic.
Sean, thank you so much for that. This is the first of our Fireside Chats. I hope you found this informative and interesting. Please join us next month when we'll be talking about our Working at Height service line, but also Working at Height and the dangers of Working at Height. It's, the number one cause of fatalities in the building industry.
It is. And actually, the current president of IOSH, Kelly Nichols, is running with that as one of our top priorities, Work at Height. So, very important subject.
Great. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.